Today's episode, Arch Madness of Texas, spring games at Michigan and Notre Dame. Is Lane Kiffin trying to ingeniously change the way spring games are played? Tale of Jeffrey Kessler, and stick around for the Joey Chestnut appreciation.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It is like the Walmart, the Meijer, if you will, if we're going to go Michigan, of tattoos.
Russ Dellinger.
Yeah, could you imagine, you know, Nick Saban doing that? Well, let's just bring in the hot dog guy and not have practice. No.
And SI's Pat Forte.
The current climate, which says if you ain't starting, you're departing.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and I hope the Missouri Valley Conference has trademarked, I'm sure they have, the term they use for their basketball tournaments, which are played in St. Louis, and they dub it Arch Madness, because they better. Because as beloved as that esteemed tournament has been, I've been there. Arch Madness. Many times. Is now located in Austin, Texas. How was that, Pat? Pretty good, huh?
It's pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. I like it. No, I like it. Look.
A little forced.
Now, if we can't pun here, where can we pun?
That's right. It's true.
So, yeah. And that's a good one. It's quality. It's true, as a matter of fact. That's the main thing. It is true. Arch Madness is in Austin, Texas, and anywhere else. Where people are interested in Texas football.
Or football. Yeah. Get them a Caesar's Palace commercial. Uncle Peyton and Uncle Eli and Grandpa Archie, let's go. Because we know spring game statistics are everything. They put it, you know, when you go to Canton, Ohio, it'll say like so-and-so, 4-5 All-Pro, 3 Super Bowls. Once went 16 of 20 in a spring game back in college. This is what happened down in Texas, because this is going to be the story. First off, Longhorns look loaded, as we expect. Quinn Ewers plays one series. Sarkisian Patrots about one series, then hands it off to Arch. And Arch Manning, 19 of 25, 355 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had 2 different 75-yard touchdown passes. Maybe most scary is both the guys who caught him, DeAndre Moore and Isaiah Bond, the Alabama transfer. His most famous catch, not last seen, but his most famous catch was the, was it?
Fourth and 31.
My goodness, I'm going to get drawn and quartered down in Alabama for getting the wrong distance. Auburn's like, it was only 31, not 32. We would have stopped it then. he caught the 4th and 31. Now he's at Texas. Arch, both receivers look good too. Arch Manning absolutely lit up Texas and the Texas spring game. There was no way to downplay it. There's been a lot of, is Arch that good? Is it just his name? This, that, the other thing. Why is he so patient and all that? This undeniably proves he is headed to the Hall of Fame, I think.
Put him in. First ballot.
Size him for the jacket. Go ahead.
Of this, Ross? What do you make of the spring performance?
The spring games are so important that the University of Texas, like many schools, didn't even bother to take official statistics. The writers in the press box had to do the old school, do play by play stats themselves. Yeah, like you're in your high school reporter again. So that's how important the spring game statistics are. That said, this shapes up to be, and we knew going into this season if Quinn Ewers had, you know, if he was going to stay. Which we found out back in January, despite many people thinking that certainly he would leave. When he announced he would stay, you kind of thought, oh boy, you know, right? This is going to be a fun off season and then camp and season, because the buzz at Texas, and I covered the Sugar Bowl, where Arch Manning actually talked for the first time as a Texas player, I believe. And that was in New Orleans. So talked to the Manning family down there, and I remember talking to tech people around the Texas team. And it was pretty clear that, that Arch was progressing very well, in practice. Everybody, I remember, back then didn't want to go overboard in their praise, but got the point across that, that Arch was doing very well. And this is going to be a heck of a balance for Steve Sarkisian when it comes to not just the offseason workouts but when camp arrives and you've got them going back and forth in fall camp scrimmages, and then when the season gets here and you've got just this incredible balance. We've certainly seen it. We've seen a lot of this through the history of college athletics. A young quarterback comes in. We saw it with Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams. That's the kind of the most recent one that comes to mind. But this one's a little different in a way that Arch is sticking around, it appears, right? And in the last couple of years, we've seen players like Arch, right, would have just left. As soon as Quinn Ewers said he was coming back, right, Arch, people like players like Arch probably would have left and entered the portal and going somewhere where he's guaranteed a start. But that's not how he or kind of his family operates. They are a little different. We saw it during the recruiting process. But, man, I am fascinated by the next, like, 6 months in Austin and what this is going to be like when it comes to, like, this balancing act that the Texas coaches will have.
When we were at the Sugar Bowl, I think the day before, 2 days before, I saw Cooper Manning and I talked to him, and his words were, "He's ready to compete." Well, I think he's ready to compete. It was a very impressive spring for Arch. There is certainly substance to the hype. It is still a spring game, many steps to go, and there is competition there. But everybody signed up for this, right? So Quinn Ewers came back knowing that Arch Manning was probably still going to be there. Arch stayed there knowing Quinn Ewers was coming back. Steve Sarkisian didn't counsel, to the best of my knowledge, either of them, "Hey, there, you know, there might be another place for you." So everybody's going to put on their big boy pants and go compete in the fall. And I don't, you know, Quinn Ewers is very good and had a great season last year, but I don't think he's guaranteed anything, nor should he necessarily be. Texas was really good last year, but Texas didn't play for a national championship, didn't win a national championship. That's the goal there. That's the ultimate goal, and maybe Arch Manning is better suited to get him there. We'll find out. If I were Sark, I'd bring them both in and say, "Look, hey, congratulations. You guys are both really good. We're going to play the best one and let the chips fall where they may." And, oh, my gosh, can you bench a starter? Well, yeah, maybe you can if Arch Manning's the backup. Can you keep Arch on the sideline for another year? Well, maybe you can if Quinn Ewers is a 3-year starter. So, you know, people are just, I think the combatants here know what they're getting into, seem like pretty mature guys, should be able to handle it. We'll see, rubber hits the road. You know, it may be frustrating to not be able to play, but it is, to your point, Ross, markedly different than the current climate, which says if you ain't starting, you're departing. And so, you know, Arch is going to stick this thing out for at least another year. And, you know, I do think that shows some maturity, some humility, and some groundedness and belief that this is where I should be.
Damn, poet to, hey. Pat 40, by the way. Poet Pat 40. If you ain't starting, you are departing. I like it.
That's right.
It's like a there rapper. Yeah, that was really good. Hip hop.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. My mixtape will drop later today.
Check out my SoundCloud. Yeah.
The mixtape, yes. 40 Yard Dash.
There you go. This is a fascinating offseason storyline that will continue into the season.
So Sark says Ewers is the starter, but we're, you know, for our vulture purposes, we won't believe him. He's probably got two NFL quarterbacks there. And Quinn Ewers is very good, and Arch looked very good here, and who knows? Better to have two NFL quarterbacks than none. And we will see. I think, you know, I think the I think you can play Quinn Ewers and then have him go pro, and Arch Manning assumes the job. Like, he's not going to leave. Does not appear he's going to leave. I mean,
right.
He could.
It's the ultimate luxury.
Ultimate luxury is you've got a guy saying, that's all right, I'm going to continue to compete and develop. But we'll see. The thing about competition and is teams kind of, the guys on the team figure out who they like better. And I have no idea. You know, Quinn Ewers could be markedly better than Arch Manning. What we saw might have been an aberration, or Arch Manning might be on his way to being the next great Manning. We really don't know. His uncle Eli at Ole Miss redshirted an entire season, did not play at all. That was back when he couldn't play at all in redshirt, and then was a backup his second year, did not play. So there's patience there. I look at this Texas schedule, and this is a big year for Texas. I mean, this is a very good football team. Very, very good football team. I am going to say this. They are entering the SEC. Could have been worse, their schedule. Now, this is not, they're not going to get to play Big 12, but they open with Colorado State. Their big non-con is at Michigan, and that'll be very interesting, both for Michigan and Texas. But they're at Michigan the second week. Then they've got UTSA, Louisiana Monroe, Mississippi State. They get Oklahoma in the Red Rivalry game. They then get a visit by the Georgia Bulldogs on the 19th of October. But after that, it's Vandy, it's Florida, at Arkansas, Kentucky, at A&M. It's not simple. But it could have been worse. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I think that key game is that Michigan game, because if you can get through that with no losses, the chances of making the playoffs, even if you lose to Oklahoma and Georgia, might still be there. So, but I wonder if things start going a little rattly, that's when you have a quarterback controversy.
Yeah. Well, obviously that's usually people, coaches, really don't relish trying to fix what ain't broke, as they might say. So, you know, they love status quo as long as things are working and you're winning. But I don't know. This is, again, I think, you know, the goal is to win a national championship. It's not to come close. So I think you got to be fairly aggressive with things. And you're right. I guess the schedule could be worse, but it's also harder than anything they've played in a long time. You know, it's going to be difficult. It could have been, like, I think Oklahoma's schedule's worse, right? Don't they? They've got
Oklahoma's is worse. I don't know. I don't know that any of these teams after the Georgia game are going to be good. I don't know how good Vandy. I don't know how good Florida's going to be. I don't expect a lot out of Arkansas. I don't know how good Kentucky's going to be, and I don't know how good A&M's going to be.
Right.
So if you got to get through the OU Georgia back to back, but it's like, I don't know. That's not a murderer's row at the last five.
Georgia might be number one.
After Georgia, Vandy, Florida, right, at Arkansas, yeah. Kentucky at A&M. The A&M game is going to be emotional. I have no idea how good A&M is going to be. I don't know. Have you done a preseason top 25? How high do you have any of these teams?
Oh, I mean, you know, I did one in January, and
well, that should change. You shouldn't have any errors.
None of the players are in the same places anymore.
Yeah. You got to track down where the players are first before you're doing a preseason top 25.
All right. Well, that's it. Texas, they're a little excited down there.
Yeah,
not as excited enough to get that fight song to get rid of the I've been working on the railroad, but
one of the interesting things is you know, in that schedule, obviously they play Michigan, who is in need of a quarterback, and you know, a lot of people might say
Arch
Manning makes a lot of sense at Michigan, you know. So I mean, it's like one of the schools where you would think, what if he entered the portal, that he might help out a lot.
Yeah, what if they go up there and he doesn't leave, he stays?
If Arch Manning entered the portal right now, he's not going to, okay, but I mean, we're going to talk later about Jaden Rashada and his 4-year, $13 million fake contract that he almost got or was promised. How much would a school pay? Would Arch Manning be the highest? I mean, he's got to be the highest paid guy if he could just enter the go right now and say, what do you want? Hey, Michigan, how much you want?
100%.
What do you think Michigan boosters would pay for Arch Manning?
$3 million? I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say probably certainly over two, I would think, especially when you're in a kind of a desperate, I don't know if you want to call their situation desperate, but anybody that doesn't have, right, a solidified starter, an experienced starter and somebody they're confident in, I would guess any power school, you know, blue blood type 10, top 10 to 15 program would pay $2 to $3 million a year probably.
Michigan did have their spring practice. And I have no idea. They did tackle during the game. Alex Orji seems to be the starter, but there's Davis Warren looked good. Then there's Jaden Davis and Jaden Dennett. This season is going to be, it is a great name too. If I had a son, maybe I'd think about naming. I didn't have a son, but Jaden is a great name. But it apparently about 20 years ago, everyone named their kid Jaden. There's a lot of Jadens out there.
See, I think it went from Jalen to Jaden. Jalen Rose spawned a bunch of Jalens, and then all of a sudden they evolved to Jaden.
Yeah, Jalen Rose claims he's the first Jalen ever. His mother invented the name Jalen.
Right.
Which is so common and is such a good name. Like, it's just like, I get like LeBron, like you're like, where'd that come from? I don't know, right? But Jalen just rolls off. I mean, that is a great name. I think it's LeBron's name, but I don't know how many LeBrons are out there. But Jalen is a great name. How did no one invent it before Mrs. Rose?
Because they were all hung up like us on single syllable names like Ross, Dan, and Pat.
Yeah, that's true. Biblical names. And now it is Jaden. There are a lot of Jadens out there. Well, Michigan's got two of them. And I don't know. I don't know who's going to be the starter there. They could probably it's a little bit on how this transfer portal is a mess with teams that are in the playoff. Like, I would think Michigan would have been more active last December in the portal if they weren't trying to win a national championship. Jim Harbaugh wasn't potentially leaving. No one knew who the coach was. And they were fighting off one of their 7 NCAA investigations. If this was spread out, I think Michigan probably would have gone on the portal. I don't know if there's anyone they can get at this point. So that was it. But I do give them credit for this. For the most part, other than the quarterbacks, they tackled. They really hit. Some schools aren't hitting.
Yep.
Michigan, baby.
That's good. That's right. Got to do it that way. I will say,
still honoring Harbaugh with the hitting.
More than ever, you know, if you're chasing a championship, you got to go with the birds in hand as opposed to messing with what's in the bush, right? I mean, you have to focus on trying to win a national championship, and then you can't pay attention to the poorly timed portal as much in December. And so that's just kind of the price of success, isn't it? You know, like Ohio State, once Ohio State lost to Michigan, whoa, all right. We're going to start tearing things down to the studs in terms of roster and rebuild it the way we want it. Whereas Michigan, hey, well, we're getting ready to go play a couple of playoff games. We'll see you in a month or two.
Yeah, Kyle McCord said on the day that they didn't, the playoff field was released and Ohio State didn't make it. So 8 days after losing to Michigan, or 2 weeks, I guess, or whenever it was very quickly, he was told he wasn't in the plans. So like they were rebooting the whole thing. Yep. But this is going to be a problem. These national championship teams actually are going to play till January 20th.
Yeah. Again, tricky. The calendar. It's an issue.
Calendar is an issue. Harbaugh got a tattoo. Did you see the tattoo? It was everywhere. Oh, yeah. He said, I'm impervious to pain. So it did not hurt. He was asked if it hurt. Said in person. That thing, it's got a kind of an M. It's not really the block M. I don't know what that thing is. And then there's a 15 and O underneath it. It is the plainest tattoo I have ever seen in my life. It is like the Walmart, the Meijer, if you will, if we're going to go Michigan, of tattoos. no blue in it, no flair. It is just, it is simple Jim Harbaugh to the T. Looks like something you could get at a prison yard or something. I don't like, there's nothing to this. Why did he get such a boring tattoo, Pat?
First of all, like, I could see Harbaugh looking, saying, where do you get a discount tattoo? Because he's not the kind of guy that's going to go lavish, you know? All right, where, all I need is an M and the record. So he gets a cheap it, gets a cheap. And yeah, the lack of frill. Okay, look, he's a whole milk guy. He used to be a Walmart khakis guy. This is, what do you expect? He's not going to go ornate. He's not going to sleeve up, anything like that. I was disappointed he didn't at least get a block M. And I did compare it to another coach, famed for NCAA scrutiny, who won a championship and got a tattoo, Rick Pitino, after the 2013 championship game. And Pitino had some color in his, some red, you know, and everything. Yeah. A little more flair for Pitino's, but Pitino's a little bit more of a flair guy.
Well, he's a Brioni suit guy.
Yes.
Like you said, is the khakis. But
yeah, hold on now. So he lives in an RV on the beach, and now he has a tattoo. So what's next here? What's the next evolution?
He's going to hang Christmas lights on his RV and leave them up all year. That's the next one.
And then release the, you know, the excrements out of the RV, right? Shitter was full. That's the next step here. Maybe get one of those hats like Uncle Eddie has.
It's in L.A. now, Uncle Eddie. Do your Uncle Eddie RV thing. Do your line. Come on.
Clark, that right there is an RV.
Oh God!
Mississippi leg hound, Dan.
He's got a lot of,
just grab gotta ride him. You got to let him go.
Ride it out. Ride it out. Notre Dame had their spring practice much more buttoned down affair. You know, Notre Dame, they keep things serious. No, they look good. Also, we're gonna talk a lot about Notre Dame this offseason. Seem well positioned to make a run at a playoff. Marcus Freeman's third year. I was listening to reading something, and it's like, well, Notre Dame coaches win the title in their third year. A little different scenario these days. It didn't 1988 or 1973 or whatever, but Freeman seems to have a very, very solid team, well constructed. Mike Dembach is back as the OC. They got to replace some offensive linemen and a few things, but look well done. Anyone pay any attention to the Notre Dame deal? It's just calm and smooth over there at the Irish.
Like Riley Leonard sat out, so they got to see some other guys, and they look like they have some receivers who could make some plays, which I think is a bit of a that's an upgrade there. I think they think their defense is going to be pretty nasty. So if you can build around Riley Leonard, who was a productive player and a great competitor. I'm still not sure he's a great quarterback. Like, he's a drop set throw 35 times a game and, you know, light up the scoreboard guy. But if you have a good enough defense, you probably don't need that. So we'll see how it all fits and comes together around Leonard at that position. But they should be optimistic, I think, about where they're sitting right now.
No pressure, right? On Marcus Freeman, third year. Who all won national championships in their third year?
Holtz, like all of them.
Holtz, right?
Pretty much Devine, all.
Yeah. Holtz era, Bob, Dan Devine.
Yeah. Wow.
I think Frank Lay, he might have even been faster than that. Brian Kelly made the championship game his third year, and then, you know, was nudged by Alabama about 106-10.
Nudged. Yeah. That's right. By the way, we were going through Texas's 2024 schedule. We're talking about Notre Dame. They opened the season at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
That should be something. Other than
get your IVs than that, ready. I'm sure that.
Yeah. Right. Woo. Other than that, they might be favored in every single game. And they might be favored in that game too. When you look at their schedule, you know, go through it at A&M, Northern Illinois, at Purdue, Miami, Ohio, Louisville, Stanford, at Georgia Tech, versus Navy, Florida State, Virginia, Army, and at USC. I mean, more than half of these teams didn't even have a winning record last year.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it's a pretty typical Notre Dame schedule. There's like three or four big ones in there, and then there's a lot that, you know, kind of middling ACC or Service Academy or Stanford sort of opponents that they should beat.
All right, we're going to be back with the spring game tug of wars right after this message. All right, so we know the transfer portal is a big deal, and all these coaches are and coaching staffs and scouting staffs are watching closely spring practice games to try to find talent that they can not tamper with and not poach. Absolutely not tamper with and not poach. And so, you know, like I saw there was a couple of MAC games, MAC teams like Western Michigan. They had a spring game. I'm like, I don't know if you should have a spring game for those guys. I mean, ideally you should, because you should be the coach that magnanimously wants to give his players a chance to showcase themselves the best opportunity that could avail to them. But if you are want to win, I wouldn't do it. And it's kind of interesting. You're seeing some of this. No tackling at some places, very casual games. And then there is really the always one step ahead of the curve is our man Lane Kiffin. The Ole Miss Rebels, they had their spring game. It was a week ago, or, you know, past whatever that is, 2 weekends ago. They had what they called the Grove Bowl, I guess it was, or they called them the Grove Bowl games. They didn't really have a spring game. There was a little bit of 7-on-7 played. But other than that, the Red and Navy teams faced off in a dunk contest. something called the Grove Bowl Gauntlet.
Grove Bowl Gauntlet. Is alcohol involved in that?
Yeah. That's true.
Chandeliers hanging from tailgating tents.
They took out a few frat guys through the years. Yeah. The Grove Bowl Gauntlet. Red Cup. Yeah.
That's a good one. That's right. Yeah.
They even had a hot dog eating contest and got Joey Chestnut there. So it was all fun. And you know, I mean, who doesn't like a tug of war? Remember those tug of war should be much more popular. That's a sport. Hot dog eating contest is always good. Anyway, they did their thing. The who won? Red won 71-70. I know y'all will be excited. I'm not sure what the DraftKings odds on that or BetMGM had for that. Was this Lane having fun, avoiding injury? Or I think Cole Kubik came up with this. Or was he just hiding his players? No tape. I'm going to say it's genius. So, and Lane is ingenious. So I'm going to say he was hiding players, no tape, whether it's true or not. But seems like a good idea, doesn't it?
Maybe it's the future of spring games. You know, we've seen things evolve, like the All-Star games, you know, like the NFL, for instance, where people just don't care as much. And so these games are evolving into something different. To try to attract a little more attention and attendance and eyeballs. And I think this is a good example of that happening at the college level. Is if you're going to have basically a spring practice and not have like a competitive game for your fans, then have players do something that we can all do and relate to. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's a pretty good idea. I agree with Dan. I don't know exactly why the reasonings behind it, because maybe it's all three of those reasons, because there would all be good reasons, right? To avoid injury, not put your players on a stage to be poached, and to give fans some kind of entertainment. Maybe we're getting a peek at the new spring game. But I would guess it's not going to catch on that quickly, because I think you'll have probably coaches that want to use that as practice. You know, you can never. I mean, they only get 15, right? So they're you're basically wasting one in a lot of ways. And could you imagine, you know, Nick Saban doing that? Well, let's just bring in the hot dog guy and not have practice. No.
Let's just bring in the hot dog guy. Dan, I think Jonte Porter bet the red team in the Ole Miss spring game.
Damn.
Bad bet, probably as usual for him. Yeah, you know, I would not be surprised, especially knowing Lane and knowing how much Lane works in the portal, if he's exactly trying to avoid producing tape that will allow people to evaluate his players, and giving players a chance to find out, oh, I'm not at the top of the depth chart and I'm out of here. I mean, remember, Lane was kind of proud of himself for kind of trapping three starting potential quarterbacks on the roster last year. So I don't think Lane is that magnanimous coach you're looking for, Dan, who's out there just hoping his players get enough exposure to put them in the best place possible. I think Lane's trying to win an SEC title at Ole Miss. And I think especially if you're like at the Western Michigan level, if you're at the MAC level, the AAC, Sun Belt, I would be leery of putting good players that you have on your roster on tape and allowing other people to see and say, oh, allow me to tamper. So it wouldn't shock me if things turned in that direction for them. You know, spring games, I mean, I have never liked them. I don't think players like them. I think coaches love spring practice and nobody else does, but that's kind of the nature of spring football. But if they did away with the games, I think America would go on. We'd soldier forward.
Well, Lane strikes me as the one rare coach who doesn't like practice, right? Only wants to see the games or the hot dog guy.
I mean, you get Joey Chestnut. Let's not, you know, Nick Saban has won a lot of championships, but has he won as much as Joey Chestnut? I think not.
Few have.
So Nick Saban's sort of the Joey Chestnut of college football. Let's keep it real. We're going to get to a debate about Nick. Yeah, I mean, look, we just talked about Texas, right? So all of a sudden, Arch Manning throws for 355 yards, and he's a perfect example because I don't believe it's going to affect him at all. But anyone else, it would be like, hey, wait a minute. If it's not Arch Manning and it's another guy, okay, and he throws for 355 in the Texas spring game, and Sark's going, yeah, Quinn Ewers is the starter. It doesn't take a whole lot. You don't have to be really into anything to look up and go, hey, Michigan's kind of needs a guy, let alone someone might tamper. All of a sudden you lose your guy, right? So, like, what was the point of that? Or maybe it builds into this controversy. I don't know. So I would hide him. I think Lane might be onto something, whether he wanted to do it or not. He just wanted to meet Joey Chestnut. Phil Steele. Great Phil Steele was not impressed. He tweeted out.
I love this.
He tweeted out, just watch the Ole Miss quote spring game. You know, Phil Steele, he does the, Pat is an acolyte.
I am. Totally.
I get it too, but Pat Same. Is even yeah. more into it. It's the preseason mag of all preseason mags. It also it runs at like 6-point font size.
Yeah,
he jams more information on one page glass. But you kind of learn how the page works, so you know where to look for stuff. It's unbelievable. Anyway, not surprisingly, Phil Steele, not impressed. He said, "Just watch the Ole Miss spring game. Got very little out of it. Dunk contest, tug of war, hot dog eating contest, obstacle course, no pads during 7-on-7 flag football game, 50-yard field. Not worth watching." Don't waste your time. Well, I would say if you're rewatching spring games and you're not trying to tamper and poach as a civilian, they're all not worth your time.
Yeah, but that's Phil. Phil is watching so that he can write down, you know, some weird shorthand way in his book, you know, two catches for 14 yards,
spring game,
one touchdown. Yeah.
Kiffin, I'm guessing. I'm guessing he uses spring games a lot, especially for depth. like his death yeah. chart. I would assume that he probably uses that a lot. Yeah, that was probably a big kind of hindrance on how he for you know an obstacle and how he maybe does his job. For the rest of us, you know, we enjoyed it.
Kiffin responded by quoting Taylor Swift. Of course
he did.
Said people throw rocks at things that shine at Taylor Swift 13.
Just
hoping for the retweet.
Taylor. looking for the T-Swift.
He wants her to come to the Grove. You kidding me?
Oh yeah.
He's a Swiftie. He's quoted her.
Of course.
Did Castles Crumbling before the Alabama game last
year. There you go. Yeah.
Right.
A lot of stuff happening. Anyway, I think Kiffin is on it. I think it's on it. All right. Our friends at Next Round Live, great show out of Birmingham, but obviously very Alabama, Auburn focused, but does a great job on all college football, all sports. They used to be just have a Birmingham radio show. Now they do it themselves. They went out and producer Joe, if you could cue this up and asked Alabama fans, I think they're Alabama fans, a question, a very important question about historical figures.
Better American, more impactful in the history, would you go Abe Lincoln or Nick Saban?
Probably Saban, yeah.
Thing is, Abe Lincoln ain't got 7 national championships, right?
I'll go Saban, all right, you got okay. me.
That's no contest, it's Nick Saban.
Probably Abraham Lincoln.
I think because I'm supposed to say this, we're going to go Nick Saban.
And I don't know. I mean, I guess Nick Saban. I don't know. I mean, nah, Abraham Lincoln for sure. He's at least a president, did something for the country.
Okay, so
I mean, as big as Alabama fan as I am, Nick Saban's still just a football coach, right?
Abe Lincoln.
So what was the final there? 7-1, I think, maybe?
There was a couple Lincolns.
I heard two or three Abes, I think, in there.
Yeah. Abe, I got distracted.
I love the guy who's like, Abe was president. I mean, it has to be him, right? He did something for the country. Something as in ended slavery. Yes.
Emancipation Proclamation. Ended the Civil War.
Preserved the Union. I mean, these Alabama, they were quitters. They quit. Abe brought them back. I think it's worked out for everybody.
Where did they do these interviews? Were they at Talladega?
Maybe. I don't know. They were kind of just out on the man on the field, it looked like.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But it looked like it might have been at like a NASCAR event or something. I don't know.
Well, Talladega was that could have been it. Could have been it. It is at Talladega.
When people don't people in certain parts of the country don't understand, like, you know, college football and specifically in the Southeast, it's hard to really explain it to them until they like go to a game and game day and talk to people like tailgating. But that's a good clip that will explain it very quickly.
Yeah, I will say most of them were laughing. Most of them were laughing.
Yeah. By the way, randomly, we talk about the transfer portal a lot on the pod as we're taping this. Colorado has another player in the portal. We should start a drinking game. Every time Colorado has a player in the portal, take a shot. That's like 18, isn't it?
It's a lot of Louis getting lost.
Yeah.
That would be, we'd be blacked out before the show was over if we did a drinking game on that.
Yeah, a lot of that. Deion Hayes, though, we talked about him last week, the Pitt defensive lineman. He's heading to Colorado. So in they go.
Yeah, they are
go.
Bringing some guys in.
Yeah.
Constant churn.
A lot of that. One more portal bit. A fascinating one. Jaden Rashada, Arizona State quarterback, is in the portal. Now, you may remember Jaden Rashada from one of the great recruiting soap operas, really, of all time. Really a modern one. I think they've discussed him in Congress, because they were so upset at Jaden Rashada, the situation. Elite, very good recruit out of Orange, California, I think it is. But out of California somewhere. Was going to go to Miami, Florida. There was rumors of a huge NIL deal there. Then he flipped his commitment to Florida and signed a deal with the now defunct, if it ever existed in reality, the Gator Collective for 4 years, $13.85 million, which is absurd. We just talked about Arch Manning maybe being worth 2 to 3. That would be 4-year, 8 to 12 million. Jaden Urshana, 13.85. People had no idea what the market was. There's throwing numbers out there. So he signs this deal to get 13.85 million to go to, I think he was going to make like 850K before he even got out of high school or something.
He only got one check, I believe.
You never got one, but I would have signed that deal too, because someone's going to pay me almost $14 million to go to college. Like you got to, you always say, don't leave Harvard. Maybe for that. $14 million to go to college. I would take that deal. Unfortunately, it was not true. He never got any money. So then he left Florida and everyone made a big to do about that. And he wound up at Arizona State, where he was supposed to be getting no NIL deal. His dad had played there and he's going to be the kind of the long-term guy for Kenny Dillingham there. Drew Pine was supposed to be the starter last season, but he got hurt. Rashada got thrown into a few games, a couple early, and then I think he played in the Arizona game. I played 3 games, hit 4 TDs, looked okay. You know, hard to say. True freshman. He was then hurt his hand, I believe, moving out of his apartment or moving somewhere. Did not participate in spring practice and now is in the portal. So after all of that, he's now back in the portal. And Florida fan has got to be absolutely aghast because he's apparently has visits scheduled to Auburn and Mississippi State, but more importantly, this weekend, Georgia Bulldogs, who need a 4th quarterback and are looking for someone for the long haul to take over for Carson Beck when Carson Beck presumably has a tremendous season and goes to the NFL after this year. So that would leave Florida with the embarrassment of this $13.85 million offer not coming through, having everyone kind of crap all over him, having to reform a new collective, and then the possibility that guy ends up the starter and they're seeing him in Jacksonville for the next couple of years. Or Jaden transfers 3 more times before then.
Well, that's the thing. You said looking for someone for the long haul. Respectfully, I would not say Jaden Rashada is the guy you look for the long haul. I hope it works out for him, but here's his curriculum vitae, so to speak. Liberty High School in Brentwood, California. IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Pittsburgh High School back in California. Committed to Miami. Decommitted from Miami. Went to Florida. Left Florida, went to Arizona State, now leaving Arizona State. He is like 19 years old, and this is like stop number 6 coming up. I think some stability might help him.
Yeah, it's like a similar track to Bear Alexander, actually, right? He went to like 3 high schools in 3 years and then transferred from Georgia to USC, and then was allegedly back in the portal again, but are going to get back in the portal, but didn't. There's a real concern. I think I read off this tweet from Bud Elliott last week, but one of the things that beware the transfer portal reporting. And one of the things was if you see a kid is reported to have been in the portal and it's like his 5th stop, in 5 years, beware, right? Then he's probably not the greatest maybe of teammates, and he obviously looks for other avenues when potentially faced with adversity. So it's definitely a sign. But as we know, these quote signs seem to sometimes schools just look right over them. Obviously, if they're in a need at a position, and those schools that Dan listed off are somewhat in a need, at least maybe next season, for that position.
I mean, if he doesn't work out at Georgia, they just get another guy, right? I mean, I don't think it's like this. I'll give you one that, I don't know, I would say worked out quite well, but it's a different sport. But Kevin Durant did 4 high schools. Kevin Durant did, so Kevin Durant played in an 8th grade team, right? He's in 8th grade. Then he did 4 high schools. That's 5 years, 5 different schools. He then went to Texas for 1 year. That's six. Then he got drafted by Seattle. That was seven. And then, no fault to his own, they moved the franchise to Oklahoma City, eight. So for eight straight years, it was after 8 years that he actually was in the same city for the second year in a row.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good run. Turned out all right for him. Although, you know, he's got his critics.
Overwhelming talent.
He's awesome. That's true. You can't really screw up Kevin Durant. And he went for a different teacher. He's also had about 14 NBA teams. So I don't know. But Jaden Rashada is gone. Sam Levitt, the Michigan State transfer, seems to be the guy at Arizona State. Also leaving Elijah Badger, who was expected to be Arizona State's top receiver. So, again, in they go, out they go. We'll see how ASU is, but kind of weird. Thought Jaden Rashada, it was looking pretty good for him at Arizona State, but
Kenny Dillingham got there. They self-imposed a bowl ban on him without really even, I think, fully notifying him or at least consulting him. They, you know, tough it out through the first year, get more sanctions, and now you're one of your top quarterbacks and top receivers are both in the portal. It's been a adventure of a start for him there.
To Kenny's credit, he wished them both well, so they were great young men. Would always be there for him. So he went that route on all that. Ross, you had a very interesting story about a very interesting guy, very smart guy, who does a lot of the hard work in sports lawsuits, I guess. I don't know quite what to say. But Jeffrey Kessler has been in, he's done lawsuits against NFL, pro sports, digs into hard things. And he, you have identified Jeffrey Kessler as the key to all, to the future of the NCAA, sort of. Great story on Yahoo Sports. I'll let you explain it so I don't butcher it.
Yeah, certainly one of the keys to the future model in college athletics is Jeffrey Kessler. Attorney, a lot of people probably in college athletics don't know who he is, but very, very important figure. He is currently suing the NCAA, actively suing the NCAA with three individual lawsuits. One is that the what's called the House case. It's probably the most notable. But before this, he sued the NCAA in the Alston case. He was the lead attorney that won the Supreme Court battle with the NCAA 9-0 in Alston to get athletes the $6,000 a year in educational benefits. So the House case is probably, of all the things going on right now in the college athletics landscape, in all the things that could shape some kind of future model, evolution, pro model, compensation model, whatever you want to call it, the House case is probably the most notable and most significant of all these things. You got the NLRB cases, right, for employment. The Johnson case, which is also employment, trying to make athletes employees. Got a variety of other lawsuits over broadcasting rights and other things. But the House case is probably the most significant. And it basically is, it goes to trial in January. And so we're coming up here about 7-8 months in it seeking two things. It's seeking damages for the name, image, and likeness pay for athletes, back pay for the last 4 years. So 4 years before NIL was instituted. So I think it's 17, 18, 19, and 20. So for those years, it's seeking back pay, which is over $1 billion in back pay for those athletes. And the second part is it's seeking a complete elimination of all athlete compensation rules related to NIL, which are kind of already toppled already by the Tennessee case. So Jeffrey Kessler is the lead attorney in this case, and it is the biggest, like I said, it's the biggest pressure point right now when you talk to college athletic administrators. And it's been no secret that college leaders are in the middle of a settlement, or at least among themselves, maybe not with Kessler yet, but among themselves, discussing a settlement agreement to the House case. And a settlement would be two parts. One, it would be that back pay over $1 billion or so in back pay to athletes. So they had to come up with that money. And number two, maybe the more important for what our discussion is a future model. And Kessler and those folks, the plaintiffs, have been very clear. They're not settling without the second part of this, without a future model of athlete compensation going forward. And Kessler holds the keys, kind of, right? If college leaders do come up with some kind of plan to present to him, he can turn the key and say, yes, I agree to the settlement, or no, I do not. So he spoke in Washington, D.C. last week at Howard University, and it was an enlightening conversation. He was pretty open about a lot of things that maybe in the past he hasn't. He talked not specifically about the settlement, but talked about, you know, Charlie Baker's proposal, the Project D1, right, which would allow athlete compensation from schools directly. And he seems to be in support of that and kind of urged college leaders to do that, right? He urged college leaders to approve the Baker proposal or something like it for athletes to start getting paid directly by schools. And so that was pretty interesting. And one other interesting note, there's, you know, the House case, the defendants in the House case, while the NCAA is listed, the Power Five conferences are also listed. The Group of Five and others are not. And he mentioned, I think this was maybe one of the more interesting things, he mentioned at Howard University during his talk that really he's just focused on the top 70 power schools for any kind of settlement, in any kind of revenue sharing going forward. So if you're a Group of Five school, and it's kind of good and bad, right? You're removed from potentially anything as far as sharing revenue, but at the same time, you're further cut, right, from the FBS. That gap will continue to grow. But it was interesting listening to him, Dan, and he's pretty sharp. He knows how athletic department finances work. You know, one of the things he said, he was sitting next to a Title IX lawyer, Arthur Bryant, who himself has sued the NCAA multiple times and won, I think, every single case or settled every single case. And he was sitting next to Arthur Bryant, and Arthur Bryant was discussing how only a small handful of college athletic departments make money. And Jeffrey Kessler stopped him, kind of like wagged his finger and said, no, that is not right. Let me explain to you why that is wrong. And he discussed, of course, what we all know about college athletic financing, department finances, right? And it is the top 30, 50, 70 schools, right? They spend all of their money, whether that's pumped back into the Olympic sports, yes, football expenses, yes, but they also spend the money on facilities and renovations, and they spend it on $1 million salaries. And so, of course, they at the end of every year, they report their finances and they break even. Basically, it shows a break even or maybe a little bit of a profit, when really, if you didn't pour all these millions necessarily in renovations to facilities or millions in coaching salaries, you would have a profit, right? You'd have some schools would have a significant amount of profit, but of course, they pump all the money back into the department, partially because of recruiting, right? You're faced with recruiting. You want to have the best coaches, so you pay the most. You want to keep your salaries competitive with others. You want to keep your facilities competitive with others. So it's just, you know, in general, it's just a dysfunctional, right, model in general, what college athletics is going through. And Jeffrey Kessler seems to understand that. So it was an interesting talk.
Yeah, it was a really interesting story, and then the quotes were fascinating. He is extremely smart. He understands the game. I'm not sure some of his solutions, so to speak, are realistic, because, you know, that was one of his points, as Ross was just delineating, that, well, yeah, we don't have to necessarily jeopardize Olympic sports. We just don't have to pay those outrageous salaries. Well, they're still going to pay the outrageous salaries. Unless there is some element of cap to compensation for coaches, which would probably be challenged in court by itself. You know, I've had ADs tell me, because I've had the discussions, if you make them choose between a $2.5 million defensive coordinator or funding the soccer and cross country teams, they're going to pay the defensive coordinator. They don't want to fund the cross country and soccer teams at the expense of paying top dollar to get the best staff that they can. We're seeing maybe some shifting in terms of facility payments towards NIL, but still, the money is going to be prioritized to football at the expense of the Olympic sports, as opposed to having everybody just suddenly get budget austerity and say, oh, never mind, we're not going to pay you that much.
He is a very, very accomplished and very, very smart guy. He's represented, he's fought for NFLPA, MLBPA, NHLPA, the women's soccer team. He represented Tom Brady and Deflategate, a million different things through the years in sports. So he is a formidable opposition to college athletics. And that was a really, really strong profile.
One other thing, Dan, I wanted to make note of that he said, talked about, is he went through what he did, what he calls the four possibilities for a future college athletic model, how it could get there, the four avenues. And I thought that was really interesting. I want to go through them really quickly. One is the conferences. So the NCAA would basically eliminate its regulations around compensation and all other NCAA rules. Basically, the NCAA would just go away when it comes to rulemaking. And the conferences, which each individually set their own rules and regulations, which would include some kind of what he called a market standard of athlete compensation. So that's one way, is in the hands of the conferences. And you hear, we're evolving to that point, right? The NCAA has eliminated a lot of rules and let conferences make a lot more rules. So we're evolving, stepping toward that. That's one way. The second way, of course, is employment, where athletes would form unions, they'd collectively bargain, they would be employees. The third way is probably the one he prefers, right? It's revenue sharing based around a settlement from the House case. And as we mentioned in that story, in the settlement discussions that administrators have had among themselves, the price per year per school would be around $15 to $20 million to share with athletes. That's kind of the thing. That's the number going around circles and in discussion point. So that's number three. Number four would be, of course, the NCAA's preference, Congress. Congress would determine some kind of legislation that grants legal protection to the NCAA and also carves out some kind of college athletic compensation model. Of course, Kessler said he believes option four, congressional legislation, would be the least likely way. But the wheels are moving, as they have been for 4 or 5 years, Dan. The wheels are creaking it on Capitol Hill. There was a function for Cory Booker on the Hill, actually at Tom McMillan's house, the lead one director, earlier this week, actually a day before the Kessler talk. And a lot of college athletic administrators actually gathered there and are zoomed in, because Cory Booker's right in the middle of congressional talks with Ted Cruz to come up with some kind of legislation. And I learned last week that, no big surprise, right? But having any kind of legislation passed this Congress this year is highly unlikely. Now, will there be a bill produced? Maybe there'll be something written from Booker and Cruz, but having something get through is incredibly unlikely. So those are the four ways that he kind of outlined: conferences, employment, revenue sharing, and congressional legislation. Thought that was interesting.
Just a bill on Capitol Hill. Good luck with that. But I'm glad they're lobbying. Glad the lobbying is happening. Keep lobbying. I wanted to end with this because we name checked him earlier, the great Joey Chestnut. And really, why the debate earlier should have been who's a greater American, Joey Chestnut or Nick Saban? Abe Lincoln, bronze medal. Sorry, buddy. Joey Chestnut's Wikipedia page is absolutely bananas. The number of records this man has held. It's not just the 76 Nathan's hot dogs in 10 minutes that, you know, is kind of famous. How about 32 Big Macs in 38 minutes and 15 seconds?
Oh, dear.
Imagine 32 Big Macs.
our dude that has eaten a Big Mac every day for like 40 years is
it's a month. It's a month of him.
Yeah.
Well, actually, he has probably two meals. Yeah, a couple weeks. Fortnite. 44 Raisin Cane's chicken fingers. 5 minutes.
Whoa.
Oh. Oh, my God.
He went to the International Barbecue Festival in Owensboro, Kentucky. 2022, he had 81 mutton sandwiches. 10 minutes.
Wow. Big moment in the O for having him there.
He went to the Salvation Army National Donut Day at the World Donut Eating Championships. I'm glad they got a corporate sponsor.
Oh, no.
The Salvation Army. Why? Why is the Salvation Army sponsoring a donut? I don't know. Is there a Venn diagram that shows some crossover there? No idea. Sponsor this podcast, Salvation Army. I mean, what? Anyway.
Look, there's Santas that ring the bells by the kettles. So they got to be fat, so they need donuts.
All right. 55 donuts, 8 minutes.
Woo. Woo.
The Gumbo Eating Championships. How about 15 bowls in 8 minutes in La Rose, Louisiana? Sir, I'm saying
La Rose, home of Ed Orgeron. La Rose, Ed Orgeron, by the way, Dan. Yeah. La Rose. Yeah.
Do you know what 15 bowls, how big 15 bowls is? You're going to die. 1.875 gallons.
In 8 minutes?
What? Oh, my God.
I mean, Wikipedia, it's always true.
2 gallons of gumbo always in 8 minutes?
1.85. Oh.
And if it's in La Rose too, it's probably like deep and rich with this just hearty dark roux. Yeah. Oh God. Talk about. I don't want to see what comes out the other end of Joey Chestnut. No.
Like that.
How about the day? How about the day? October 5th, because on 2019, because on October 4th, the man ate 84 carnitas tacos in 8 minutes. Oh, 82. I'm sorry, 82. Or the day he went to the, he was down in Port Charlotte, Florida in 2019 and ate 47 grilled cheese sandwiches in 10 minutes.
Is there any chance that Joey Chestnut doesn't die young? How can you put your body through that?
Mid-late 40s, maybe? 50-ish? 45, 50?
I think he's, I don't know.
Just guessing.
Wikipedia should tell us.
How about in 8 minutes flat, he ate a 14.5-pound boysenberry pie once.
14.5-pound?
Oh, my God.
Come on.
It's all there, man. 103 Crystal Burgers in 8 minutes. Ooh. At the Crystal Square Off in Chattanooga.
The Crystal Square Off.
To conclude it, We know we're big fans. We've mentioned this many times. The Big Texan, the Amarillo steak joint.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Right? They actually bill themselves as the Big Texan Steak Ranch in Amarillo. The 72-ounce steak challenge. You got to try to eat that thing, and you get it free. He polished that bad boy off in 8 minutes and 52 seconds.
Come on now. A 72-ounce steak in less than 9 minutes.
Someone called him the hot dog guy. Someone called him the hot dog guy. Put some respect on Joey Chestnut's name.
Okay, the food guy.
The mass inhalation guy.
Yeah.
The goat of all goats. I mean, this shows multi-skills. It's one thing to jam those hot dogs down. A 14.5-pound boysenberry pie?
Question to these people, man on the street, should have been Abraham Lincoln or Joey Chestnut.
Yeah, right.
Saban's doesn't even make
the finals.
No. All right. Well, Saban won the thing. Anyway, that's it, Joey. If you got a couple minutes to kill, and you know, go read our stories. But if you don't do that, when you're done with that, head over to the Wikipedia page of Joey Chestnut. He's born in Kentucky, Pat.
Really? Where?
Fulton County. H.
Fulton County. That's way west.
Grew up in Vallejo, California. He has an engineering and construction management degree from San Jose State.
Hmm. Does it say how old he is?
Yeah, come on.
Let me see here. Hold on. He's 40.
40? Okay. Oh, wow. 40.
I hope he makes 50.
I think he's going to be fine. This is a professional. He knows what he's doing. Training. He trains by fasting and stretching his stomach with milk, water, and protein supplements. Since the start of his competitive eating career, his competition weight has varied from 225 to 240 pounds. After winning his sixth consecutive hot dog eating contest in 2012 by eating 68 hot dogs, he stated, "I will not stop until I reach 70. The sport isn't about eating. It's about drive and dedication. At the end of the day, hot dog eating challenges both my mind and my body."
I mean, he put Kobayashi into retirement, didn't he, in the hot dog eating thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He trains by cooking tons of hot dogs at his house. The grocery store down the street must be one blip in the corporate like it's Kroger.
Joey's training again. We just sold 200 hot dogs.
Is there one store sells way more hot dogs than all the others? He'll start with 40 dogs and then work his way up into game shape.
Oh my God.
Compared it to running or lifting weights for others. Yeah. So
I think I'm good.
That's enough.
Thank you,
that's
Dan. Enough. Yeah. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Me and Lane, well, at least Lane Kiffin and I appreciate him. Hot dog guy. This is a great champion. We're going to be back on Wednesday. We will talk more college football, preview the big NFL draft. We are also bringing back the post-draft show. Actually, we're not bringing it back. We do it every year. Sobriety uncertain.
Optional.
Sobriety levels. There was the epic time Pat got drunk and talked about how much he hates some of the names of the Kentucky Derby horses.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I believe there was a horse named Soup and Sandwich that got you out
of Soup and Sandwich. That's what set me off.
Yeah, you were all up in arms.
It was epic. But so that is our schedule this week. 3 bonus. So get going. Tell your friend to tell a friend. Talk to you later.